Rivers can be a boundary, or they can be a bridge. You can think of some great rivers the place they filled in our imagination in history. Go back to ancient times, you can think about the River Styx and how we journeyed across that and went off into the underworld. In our own history, we can all think of the iconic image of George Washington in that boat leading the troops across the Delaware and launching an attack on the British. Here in Lebanon, we have a river that we spend a lot of time with, even if we don't think about it, and it's the Connecticut River. And every day, people travel back and forth across the bridge from West Lebanon into Heartland. They're going to jobs, they're going to school, they're going to play, and they really don't think about the river. And they don't think about the fact that they're actually crossing from one state, New Hampshire, into another, Vermont. Now, New Hampshire and Vermont, at least to the outside world, don't seem very different, right? But up here, we all know otherwise, right? New Hampshire has its way of doing things. Vermont has its way of doing things. They have completely different political cultures, and some people love that, and some people don't. But the truth is, we really aren't all that much different, at least in this part of the world. We've taken to calling ourselves the Upper Valley. We've defined ourselves with an identity that draws us together, that seeks to create one community. And this has been the case for a long time, though that label was, I believe, given prominence by the Valley News, which consciously sought to promote the Upper Valley. But the fact is, people in this neck of the woods long ago saw themselves as part of one community. And an example of that is within our church. As you may know, we're part of the Grafton Orange Sullivan Association, which was originally the Grafton Orange Association, which was formed about 100 years ago, back when we were part of the Congregational Church. It pre-exists the denomination of which we are now a part. And when the church formed in 1957, it organized itself around conferences. They couldn't call them dioceses. They had to have a funky new word. And the conferences were largely based on state borders. And with smaller states like New Hampshire or Vermont, the entire state became a conference. In bigger states like Pennsylvania, it was carved up into a few conferences. And within these conferences were associations, which in other denominations was more of a pedigree, would call them deaneries. Well, the folks out in Cleveland, which is where the national setting of the church is headquartered, suggested that the Grafton Orange Association should split up because it crossed borders. That all makes sense from Cleveland's perspectives, but the people here said, no, thank you. And indeed, we have been approached about this time and time again. We even talked about it last year, and we said, no, we're not going to do that. We don't care what people in Cleveland want. We're New Englanders. This is the way we have always done it. Now, there's not just cussedness here. We know what borders work for our community, and drawing an artificial boundary that happens to meet the needs or perspectives of somebody else doesn't make sense to us. We join together in ministry and mission as one people. Part of it is tradition. It's the way we've done things for a long time. Now, traditions can be very serious things, and sometimes they can be somewhat mirthful. I think of a tradition that has gained great currency in recent years, and that is the singing of Sweet Caroline at Fenway Park during baseball games. Neil Diamond has no connection to Boston. There's no reason for this tradition to have caught on, but it has, and people have embraced it, and they love singing it. People in other parts of the country would probably like to see it go away, but again, we're New Englanders. There are other traditions, though, that have more meaning, where people have more of an investment. And one of those is the singing of the national anthem at sporting events. Now, this has, in recent months, occasioned some controversy. And some people want the national anthem to be left alone, and others want to use it as a moment for protest. I'm not going to delve into those waters today. But I am going to observe that one of the reasons people have such strong emotions about this is that the singing of the anthem touches deeper feelings and emotions. We have made an investment in what is going on, and people care. So traditions can be very important to us. But where do they come from? Some of them just happen to arise, and people then carry them forward. For example, the way furniture has been arranged in the sanctuary here, or banners have been hung up in the lobby. Well, when we took down the banner that was in the lobby and hung it in the parish hall, some people were really upset, because that's the way it had always been. But there was a time before that banner was made that it wasn't there. And so what happened to be a matter of usage became a matter of tradition. And then it became a matter of discussion. And then it changed. And guess what? No one thinks about it anymore. Other times, though, traditions arise because people have given the matter some thought. And they look at an event or an occurrence, and they realize it's something that needs to be marked by some actions and by some ritual. So we look at today's passage from Joshua. Did anybody here recognize echoes of anything in the story that was read to us this morning? Anybody? Okay, you're nodding your head. That's good. Anybody else? The Red Sea. Very good. Yes. We spent some time with that passage from Exodus earlier this fall. And we remember that the Israelites were delivered from Egypt and they were brought across the Red Sea, that the waters were held back. Moses lifted up the staff, God had empowered it, and they crossed to safety. Well, here we have echoes of that story. The Israelites are crossing the River Jordan. The waters are held back, they're on dry land, and they go into the promised land. The stories aren't exactly the same, though. For one thing, there isn't an army chasing down the Israelites. They seem to be able to plan to make the crossing. But there are echoes of that earlier story, and they are intentional. And they're there for a reason. Joshua is the new leader of Israel. Now, imagine how he must have felt. Moses has been in charge for more than 40 years. Moses, who'd stood up to Pharaoh. Moses, who brought the children of Israel across the river. Moses, who brought the law down from Sinai. Moses, who quelled rebellion. Moses, who had been the only leader these people ever knew. And now this guy Joshua is going to be in charge. Now, yes, he's been by Moses' right hand the whole time. He's been groomed for this role. But he must have wondered, what is going to happen? And God, as is always the case, had a plan. And the Israelites were to observe certain rituals and establish certain traditions, which would ground Joshua in Moses' legacy. And just as the children of Israel were led out of Egypt by God, they would be brought into Israel by God. Joshua was deemed to be Moses' successor. Now, some traditions are one-off deals and maybe are just recalled, and other times they are acts that we perform on a regular basis. And we in the Christian church have a tradition, communion, that we celebrate on a regular basis. We believe that communion was given to us 2,000 years ago by Jesus himself. And we share rituals and we say words that were given to us by Christ. We talk about the bread being broken and it's a reminder of his body, the cup being poured and how it's his blood of the new covenant, the forgiveness of sins. And in different churches, we may observe different forms of this rite. But Christians all over the world, regardless of whether they're Catholics or Protestants or Orthodox, and regardless of the language they speak, come together and share in this sacrament. It's one of the only two sacraments that survived the Reformation. Now, this sacrament, like anything else we do in the church, can be a bridge or a boundary. And our hope is that everybody feels that they are able to participate. And we've made conscious decisions about the form of communion we share. We have an open table here. And in some churches, not everybody is welcome to come forward. If they're not baptized, they're not welcome to share the elements. But the fact is, after some reflection, we decided here that we were going to have an open table because it's not our table. The table isn't mine. It's not yours. It's not the deacon's. It's not the congregation's. It's Jesus' table. And none of us is qualified to be a gatekeeper for Jesus. So all are welcome to come and share in the meal. We also have children coming up to take communion here. And some of you may come from traditions or histories where that was not the case. And the argument is often made that children shouldn't take part in communion because they don't understand what is going on here. Well, to that, my response is, I don't know that we understand what is going on at the communion table. The church has always taught that it is a mystery, and we should all approach it with humility. So if someone can come forward with an open heart and a sense of anticipation, they're welcome. And frankly, kids probably do that more than adults do. So we have something to learn from them, and we try to use it as a bridge. Indeed, everything we do in church can be looked at as either being a bridge or a boundary. You may have noticed over the years that the print in our bulletin has gotten bigger. Well, not all of us have good vision, right? So we try to make it legible for everybody. We also have little cues to tell you when to stand and when to sit so you don't have to feel left out. We even print the Lord's Prayer. It has amazed me the number of congregations that just print the words, the Lord's Prayers, and then put in parentheses, debts or trespasses. If you haven't been to church before, what does that mean? And what does it say when everyone then stands up to say this prayer, which is one of the central creeds of our church? You don't feel welcome. So we print the words in the bulletin. With our fellowships and our committees, the same intent is present. We try to build bridges to welcome people into our common life. So, I'm not going to suggest we create any new traditions today, but I am going to ask that we reflect on the ones we have. Just doing something because we've always done it that way, or that's the way it's supposed to be, is not a reason. It's an excuse. And it's lazy thinking. But to do something because our forebears did it and we value the reason they did that and it has meaning for us is a great reason to carry on a tradition. So today and in the future, I hope that we will reflect on traditions, both in the church and in our lives. Maybe when we're driving across the bridge over to Vermont. And then we will feel the Holy Spirit guiding us forward into the future, connecting us with the past, so we can live fully in the present.